In a Washington, D.C. courtroom in 1951, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg faced the ultimate penalty for atomic espionage. Behind this historic prosecution stood J. Edgar Hoover, architect of the case that would send the first American civilians to the electric chair for espionage. This wasn't just another conviction. It was the culmination of Hoover's lifelong crusade against those he considered enemies of America. For 48 years, this complex figure dominated American law enforcement, transforming a corrupt backwater agency into the world's premier investigative force, while simultaneously amassing unprecedented personal power. Presidents feared him, celebrities courted him, and ordinary Americans both revered and dreaded his reach. What made Hoover extraordinary wasn't merely his longevity, but how profoundly he shaped American society, creating an institution that was celebrated in popular culture, even as it secretly monitored civil rights leaders, politicians, and countless citizens whose ideas he deemed dangerous. Born January 1, 1895 in Washington, D.C., Edgar Hoover's middle-class facade concealed family trauma. His grandfather's suicide and father's depression fueled his obsession with control and respectability. As valedictorian at Central High and George Washington University Law School, he displayed relentless ambition. Even as a library clerk, he meticulously organized index cards, foreshadowing his future passion for collecting information on Americans. Hoover's worldview was shaped by Kappa Alpha, a fraternity celebrating Confederate mythology and segregation. During World War I's anarchist bombings, he worked under Attorney General Palmer and played a key role in the Palmer raids, developing surveillance techniques that would become FBI signatures. Though criticized for civil liberties violations, these operations showcased his talent for bureaucratic organization and public relations, skills that would sustain his power for decades. When appointed acting director of the Bureau of Investigation in 1924, the 29-year-old Hoover inherited an organization plagued by corruption. He immediately fired incompetent agents and established professional standards, requiring law or accounting degrees for new hires, and implementing a code prohibiting on-duty drinking or conduct unbecoming a gentleman. Hoover established a forensic laboratory, centralized fingerprint collection, and national crime statistics program. By 1932, the Bureau had compiled over 4 million fingerprint records, an unprecedented resource for nationwide law enforcement. The Depression's crime wave forced further evolution as bank robberies and kidnappings surged. After the Kansas City Massacre claimed an agent's life in 1933, Hoover secured authorization for agents to carry firearms, transforming his professionals into the armed federal police force we recognize today. The Bureau's pursuit of notorious criminals like John Dillinger and Pretty Boy Floyd captured public imagination. When Dillinger was killed outside Chicago's Biograph Theater in 1934, Hoover's agents became national heroes, G-men who always got their man. Initially resistant to this shift toward gunplay, Hoover quickly recognized its public relations value, cementing his image as America's top lawman. Throughout his career, Hoover maintained a carefully controlled image of moral rectitude. He never married and lived with his mother until her death in 1938. His most significant relationship was with Clyde Tolson, whom he hired in 1928 and who became associate director. For over four decades, they were inseparable, dining together daily, vacationing together, and attending social functions as a pair. When Hoover died, he left the bulk of his estate to Tolson, who received the flag from his casket. This created a profound contradiction in Hoover's life. While maintaining what many recognized as a same-sex partnership, the FBI, under his leadership, persecuted homosexuals in government service. During the Lavender Scare of the 1950s, thousands of gay and lesbian federal employees lost their jobs, with the FBI maintaining extensive files on their private lives. Despite his stern public image, Hoover enjoyed celebrity company and high society, frequenting racetracks, nightclubs, and Hollywood premieres. His friendship with gossip columnist Walter Winchell provided both social connections and media protection, while wealthy benefactors afforded him luxuries beyond his government salary, revealing the complexity of a man who policed American morality while navigating his own complicated relationship to those boundaries. The Cold War transformed Hoover's FBI into America's primary defense against communist infiltration. The Bureau compiled extensive files on suspected communists and infiltrated left-wing groups, with the Alger Hiss case and Rosenberg arrests seemingly validating Hoover's concerns about Soviet espionage. In 1956, Hoover secretly launched COINTELPRO to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize targeted groups. Beginning with the Communist Party, it expanded to include civil rights organizations, black nationalist groups, and anti-war activists, employing tactics from anonymous letters and fake media to IRS audits and deliberate provocation of internal conflicts. The civil rights movement particularly troubled Hoover. Despite investigating some racial crimes, he remained deeply suspicious of its leadership. He authorized extensive surveillance of Martin Luther King Jr., convinced King had communist influences. This surveillance went beyond security concerns into King's personal life, with agents bugging hotel rooms and documenting extramarital affairs. In 1964, an anonymous FBI letter urged King to commit suicide to avoid public humiliation, perhaps the Bureau's most shameful act. Hoover's antagonism toward King reflected both his anti-communist paranoia and conservative racial views, marking one of his greatest moral failures. By the late 1960s, Hoover had become an institution unto himself. Despite reaching mandatory retirement age in 1965, Presidents Johnson and Nixon issued special waivers for his continuation. Nixon valued Hoover's law and order stance, though their relationship deteriorated as Nixon attempted to use the FBI for political purposes beyond Hoover's tolerance. Hoover's final years saw increasing isolation and paranoia amid declining health. His public image had tarnished among younger Americans, and the 1971 break-in at the FBI's Media Pennsylvania office exposed COINTELPRO operations, further damaging the Bureau's reputation. After Hoover died on May 2, 1972, Nixon ordered a national day of mourning. Subsequent congressional investigations revealed the full extent of FBI abuses under his leadership, prompting 1976 legislation limiting future FBI directors to a single 10-year term, ensuring no one would again amass Hoover's level of power. Hoover's legacy continues to shape American debates about security, liberty, and government power. While he transformed law enforcement through professionalization and scientific methods, these achievements came at significant costs. Surveillance of political dissidents, deceptive counterintelligence techniques, and secret files on public figures. His failure to address racial injustice placed him on the wrong side of America's moral reckoning with discrimination. Most troubling was Hoover's unchecked power. By cultivating relationships with presidents, congressmen, and journalists, he evaded oversight. His extensive files on politicians' private lives created a climate of fear that silenced criticism. Behind an apolitical facade, Hoover controlled which groups received government scrutiny. In our era of expanded surveillance, Hoover's story serves as both inspiration and warning. His innovations improved law enforcement, while his abuses demonstrate the dangers of unconstrained power. As we balance security and liberty in the digital age, we should remember both the achievements and excesses of the man who profoundly shaped America's understanding of law enforcement and democratic freedoms.